friends, statistics show that 76% of business owners today plan to leave their business in the next 10 years. That's a lot of people. But it also means that there's going to be a lot of exiting entrepreneurs competing for acquisition dollars. And yet, my friends, I know this to be true that, you know, when we're building our businesses, when we're growing our businesses, we're not thinking about our exit strategy. So that's why today I have a very special guest, and we're going to talk about tips for maximizing your sale of your business. Welcome to the Work Less, Profit More Business Podcast for business leaders who want to scale, sustain, and systemize their business because they're sick and tired of being that chief everything officer. Hi, I'm Diana Lidstone, business strategist known for my straight talk, no BS, and the simple small business strategies and mindset shifts that bring my clients more joy, profit, and freedom. So if you're a lawyer, financial advisor, real estate investor, maybe even an accountant or other business owner who feels trapped in the day-to-day running of your business, then welcome aboard. Oh, exit strategies. It's something that business owners rarely plan for. And so today, my special guest is Wendy Brookhouse. I've had her on the podcast before, and Wendy is now known as the ultimate wealth amplifier, empowering ambitious entrepreneurs to maximize and amplify all of their assets. So welcome aboard, Wendy.
Thank you for having me, Diana. This is such an exciting topic.
Yeah, I know. You just light up when you talk about this. And I know you and I have had many discussions about small business owners exiting their business because the fact of the matter is we get in it and we're going to leave it someday. So, you know, you and I were talking earlier about why this is important. Both you as a, you know, certified financial planner and myself as a business coach, why is it so crucial that entrepreneurs, small business owners actually make a plan for their exit?
Well, a couple of things, one of which you talked about earlier is that 76%, that's a lot of competition in potentially. So you obviously want to do a plan so that you can be the shiniest, brightest apple on the block so that when it comes time to sell and you put the for sale sign, they see nothing else because your apple looks so beautiful and delicious and you must have that apple, right? So that's really important. The scary part about that statistic is when you dig into that report, Diana, only 9% of business owners have actually written a plan on how they may manage their transition.
Well, you know, I think the word plan, P-L-A-N, it's a four-letter word for a lot of business owners. So whether it's they are doing long-term plans or short-term plans, but, you know, your exit strategy, you've got to plan it out. And planning it out allows you to make not only clearer decisions, but I think it can rally your team around you because it's the direction. They know where they're going.
There's so much to unpack because it's so key what you just said. So a couple of things. First off, you know, there is a life after work and you want to properly fund that. So for a lot of people, when they started their business, it may not have been their biggest asset, but now it is. And so how do you make sure you get the most amount of money in your jeans? It's interesting when I talk to accountants that during the pandemic, a lot of people got very tired and just said, just get rid of it, right? So what they did is they got lower prices and they probably paid more taxes because they didn't do the right amount of planning as a result of that. But they were just so tired, they weren't willing to do that. But that does highlight, this is not a 6-month exercise. This is a year to 2 years, sometimes a little bit longer in terms of setting up the right pieces to make sure you're properly prepared for exiting and that you're going to maximize that price because, you know, this is your biggest transaction that may happen at some point in your life and you want to make sure you get the most dollars. I can't say that enough. You know, when we look at the net worth statements of business owners and knowing that there's this kind of big black hole there on the business value, like, oh, well, what do you think it's worth? And, you know, how do you figure that out? And how do you then be deliberate and intentional about making that number bigger?
Yeah, I think that's so key. That's so key. You know, exiting, like you said, it's a huge shift that happens. And for our listeners, you may not know, but my sister has recently sold her veterinary practice. So I've watched her go through this process and the mindset shift, A, to prepare for it. What are you going to do after? There's so many things that, you know, it's kind of like a Rubik's Cube. You got to line up all the pieces and get them all together.
It is complex. And some of the things that I think you need to think about when it comes to selling your business and how to make it more valuable may be a little counterintuitive to what we have in the past thought of, well, this is how I should build my business because, you know, the more profit I have, the more I will make, right? And that to some extent is true. But if you optimize the operations of your business and how you conduct that business, that can affect the multiple that gets applied to your profit. So then you can increase the value of your business because sometimes people think, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to work harder all the time to make my business worth more. And I'm saying that's not necessarily the case.
Yes, Wendy. I love that because, you know, I'm all about, you know, work less, profit more.
Yeah.
And having systems and optimizing efficiencies in your business is key to allowing you to work less and the business seen as more valuable because, you know, we're going to get into, you know, the tips to maximize the value of your business. But to me, one of the biggest benefits, if I was looking to buy a business, would be that number one is that the business owner is not, shall we say, in the weeds of the day-to-day running of the business, because that to me shows that the business owner is like the bottleneck and the business is dependent on them.
That is a surefire recipe for diminishing the value of your business.
Yeah.
I love it. I have an accountant friend and he talks about a business as a black box that shoots out cash. And so when you think about it from a buyer perspective, well, what do they want? They want a box that works very efficiently without them that shoots out a lot of cash. So how are they going to be able to see themselves in your business if you are overworked, underpaid, stressed out, everything revolves around you? Who wants to buy a job like that?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, they would be buying themselves another job, a job. And, you know, that's not, I don't think, what people are looking for. So when I introduced you, you know, I talked about maximizing and amplifying all of their assets. So I'd like to just go back to that because I think, yes, your business should be an asset, but within your business, there's an ecosystem of assets.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think business owners forget that they need to be building those assets within the asset, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, your website is an asset. So is your website up to date or is it a crappy piece of whatever from 10 years ago? Yeah. You know, your team is also an asset. The culture that your team creates is an asset. Are they functioning, you know, really, really well? Yesterday, I was working with one of my private clients and she has, I'll say 13 employees, and she was creating workflow structure. And I went, that's so amazing because somebody can look at that and go, oh my God, if you've got a workflow structure and she's got, you know, titles to people and job roles and responsibilities, they go, there, you've got a system. I know what I'm buying. So, yeah.
Well, and I think that it's easy to see those systems when you're buying a franchise, for example, because they've done that work. But if you can kind of view yourself almost as, if I were to step away from 3 months, could this place run without me? I mean, it's a good litmus test.
Yeah.
And that means, number one, you have to have policies and procedures. You also have to teach critical thinking and how to make decisions so that when different things come up, they kind of go, oh, these are the values of our organization. And now I understand, here's what I'm going to use as the barometer to make this decision that the vacationing 3 month away owner would be proud of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that comes all the way back to having a vision for your business and the goals and, you know, the core values.
Yeah.
And how does that all align? So yeah, that's great. So you mentioned franchising, and you know, for those listeners who haven't read The E-Myth, E-Myth is like probably the number one business book business owners should start with, if nothing else.
I recommend every client who's a business owner.
Yeah. The E-Myth is really the entrepreneurial myth. And most business owners create a JOB for themselves instead of looking at it, what can I do to kind of create a franchise mindset, shall we say?
What I love about that book is they talk about the three hats as a business owner that we wear. We have the technician, we have the manager, and we have the entrepreneur. So I feel like if you were to look at the technician role, we all started there, Diana, because when we start a business, we're doing all the things. That's fine. And we're somehow trying to manage ourselves. But I think that to have a truly sellable business, what you're doing is you're transitioning yourself all the way through to entrepreneur. That's the hat you want to wear the most of the time.
Yeah.
And then once you are there, that means you're probably dealing with a much more valuable business than if you are a technician. Also, if you're 100% in technician or you're in a great deal of technician land, number one, you're setting some revenue plateaus that will happen at some point in your business because you're the person probably doing the sales and then you're fulfilling the sales. Well, right, when we know that that's going to lead to a ceiling. And if you want to break through that ceiling, what got you there is going to have to change because it's not going to get you to the next level.
That's it. Exactly. And I talked about that quite a bit in a previous series that I did Think Like a CEO. And that's an 8-part series where I touch on various aspects, but it's the mindset shift. What is your identity as the CEO versus the technician? So, yeah.
And I just took a number of entrepreneurs through exercises to do with that, Diana. And it's a huge shift that you have to kind of deal. There is so much mindset that you may not even be aware of that's restricting you from stepping into the CEO. And sometimes it's even just languaging. So when we changed the word CEO to leader of your company, more people were like, yeah, I can do that. So being aware that just change the language to something that you resonate with and can identify with, and then you step into that.
Yeah. And it's interesting about language. Anyway, we could go down another rabbit hole. Yeah. Okay. Let's get back to the tips about, you know, how you can maximize the value and or the sale of your business.
We've touched a little bit on some of those, Diana, and that is the policies, procedures, the methodologies that you use. Also, make sure your books are done well and show what you are predicting they can have confidence in. So if you're saying, hey, my business grows by 20% a year, we'll show them that because that will give them confidence that what they're buying is something that works. And here's something that's a little counterintuitive. One tip is sell less things to more people.
Yes. So can you give the listeners an example of that?
Well, I think it can be in my world, like example, from a financial planner point of view, I can, you know, do plans that are state plans. I can do retirement income plans. I can do financial plans. I can do all kinds of things. And if I narrow it down to one, then I become super known for it. My policies, procedures, methodologies are easy to articulate. The value proposition is so much easier to articulate. And I know exactly my profit margins on those. I know exactly what each step is. So it becomes a bit of more known quantity and it's less confusing to the market. I'm sure you've gone through that type of stuff. So, you know, there's a common thing out there that says, hey, if I were to sell, I have 100 clients that are like this. I could potentially sell more things because I already have a relationship. So why don't I start selling extra things to them because they'll buy from me? So then you've added complexity. And I'll give you an example from the Business Value Builder situation. And they talk about this woman who started a company. She wanted to do nanny services. So she had a nanny. And when she did all the research to figure out how to pay them, this was in the US, it was complex. So she built a software that made it super easy for parents to pay their nannies and follow all the guidelines. So she could have actually gone out and said, oh, I can sell more things to parents. because I already have this. But she didn't. She stayed true to that. And what happened was when she was ready to sell, she found someone who already sold other stuff to the parents, amalgamated it in, and she got 35 times her multiple on her income because it was so specific and they already had an audience to sell to one other thing.
Yeah. So niche down.
Oh my gosh. It's the hardest thing as a business owner. I was talking with someone about that today because it requires us to say no to stuff.
Yes. How true.
And some of that has dollars assigned. And you know, sometimes that's super hard. But the more true you can be to that, the better off you will be and keep you in your zone of genius as opposed to just doing everything for everybody, right? Just because you can.
Yeah, just because you can. And it is really hard for entrepreneurs to do that. Because just like you said, they're saying no to some money as opposed to saying yes to a bigger, you know, if you think of it in terms of rocks, pebbles, sand, you know, saying yes to the bigger rocks.
Yeah.
Because you've only got so much bandwidth.
You only have so much bandwidth. And another scope creep, I'll call it, for entrepreneurs, you know, that can trap you in the technician role is when you're talking to clients and they ask for things, you know, that aren't in the regular product and they ask for more and you go, oh yeah, I can do that. Well, you just trapped yourself. No one else in the organization is actually trained to deliver it. Just because you know how to deliver it doesn't mean anyone else is. Yeah. So now you've locked yourself into that.
Yeah. And so, you know, it could be an accountant who specializes in, they could be in an industry or maybe they specialize in, I don't know, maybe an industry and maybe business advisory services. So, you know, I think when business owners are aware about niching down,
yes,
they can see it as they go through their business journey, their, I call it a freedom timeline, because you just keep niching down as you go through it.
Key point to your accountant that I've seen throw a few accountant and bookkeepers offline is they are super, super good at, say, QuickBooks. And then someone comes to them with FreshBooks and they go, okay, I'll learn. And it throws them completely off their game.
Yeah. And they have to be able to, like you said, say no. Okay. Let's get back to tips to maximize the value of your business.
All right. This one was a hard one for people in my course. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Don't know all your clients' names.
Okay. Don't know all my clients' names.
Right. So if you think of a CEO, they may know some. But do they know every client name in that people are servicing in their company? Chances are they not at the CEO level.
They might know the big rocks.
But they may not know the little rocks, right? So, you know, if you know everybody's name and everybody knows you and wants to deal with you, issue.
Issue. Red flag.
Red flag. Change that up right away. And one of the tips for people to start transferring relationships on those things is always have someone else on the call with you. Right. So if you're doing a sales call for a service or a product, and you know that you don't want to be the person delivering that service, have the person who will be on the call with you so that you're already building up the trust. Definitely. And yes, just by them being on the call, they've met them, you've taken away some of the apprehension they may have about someone new because they've already met them. So that's just even one way to start transferring relationships, have someone else on the call.
Yeah, that is so huge. And I see that a lot in professional services.
Yeah.
You know, well, I've built that relationship. How am I going to transfer it to somebody else? And yeah, by sharing that relationship, I think is a good one. Okay, so we have systems. You got to create systems. So systems are an asset. You've got to have your, I'll call them financial statements, you know, up to date and showing trends.
Yes.
Number three is sell less things to more people. In other words, niching down, increase your profit margins.
Yeah.
Number four is if you know all of your clients' names, that's a red flag.
It can be, yes.
Can be a red flag. Right. I know all of my clients' names because I have a wee business.
Well, and are you building a business to sell, Diana?
No, that's right.
Right. That's the difference right there, right? If you're an entrepreneur with a growth mindset and you want to build something bigger than yourself, then you need to start thinking about how do I introduce other people to the equation to free your time up for CEO stuff versus the day-to-day operational pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have four tips. Anything else that you can?
I have one more. I encourage everybody to build out a recurring revenue stream as much as possible, which helps on a number of levels, Diana, because if you've built out, maybe it's a membership, maybe it's some sort of automatic ordering thing, you know, that type of thing. It's fascinating with Amazon Prime. So Amazon Prime, sure. I pay a couple $100 to be a member of Amazon Prime. Here's the interesting piece. If you are not a member of Amazon Prime, you'll probably spend an average of $800 on that platform a year. If you are a member, you spend $1,500.
Yes. And why is that? It's just a...
Yep. And if you'll notice, there's a lot of on our consumable things, like, I don't know, shampoos and other stuff, there is an incentive for us to actually subscribe to get the service. So we'll get a small percentage off. But think about that. They have now got certainty on inventory. They've got certainty on, you know, what revenue will be from those subscriptions when they wake up in January. You know, there's all kinds of things. And looking at it so differently, like looking at that lens, there's a great story about a flower business owners who figured this out as well from a recurring revenue. So if you look at the flower industry, when do we buy flowers? Special occasions, right? And so the average buy at the time of the study that I am referring to was $30 every time you go in, right? What do we go in? 2-3 times a year? And do we have any loyalty? Maybe, maybe not, right? And the percentage of waste in that industry is high, high, high. So these guys went in and they sliced and diced all the different types of people that buy flowers. And what they figured out was, listen, we could build a recurring revenue stream in the flower business with hotels.
Mm.
So hotels want fancy dancy fresh flowers, you know, probably once a week. And so they went from a lifetime value of a client from $30 to well over $4,500 and took their waste to 3%.
Yeah.
Because they knew every week how many bouquets had to be built and da 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 versus, hey, I really hope someone drops in and buys flowers for their mother.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that so many entrepreneurs, and you know, I'm speaking from those people that I work with, the professionals, it's such a different way of thinking about their business that some of them can't see it and others go, but.
Oh, for sure. Like, yeah, it's a natural resistance. And, you know, it was interesting. We had in my program when we were going through this module, because there's 9 different recurring income models. And what I love about my program is we actually narrow it down to 2 or 3 and then we discuss which ones might make most sense for you. But we had a guy, he was a renovator. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, how do you do that in renovations? Because that seems so never going to happen, right? He started thinking and he came up with this brilliant idea. Well, if I became the builder of choice or the renovator of choice for different condo buildings, what will happen is I can become super familiar with their systems and processes and their rules, and I'll be able to, over time, reduce my costs and time, but still be able to charge a regular price. So I can increase my profit margin on jobs if I go in and I'm doing 10, 15 within the same building.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a brilliant way of looking at the recurring revenue. It's not pure recurring, but it sure helps in the sense of if you're the guy for this place.
If you're the go-to, right?
Yeah.
If you are the instead of ah.
Yes. And I think we undervalue as professional service builders the importance of community with our clients, that they love having other people that they know are in the same boat as them and like to learn from each other as well, and facilitating those conversations and providing education. There's all kinds of ways I think professional services can just flip that on their lens, rip out preconceived notions, and talk to their clients about what they really want and what would they pay for on a monthly basis.
Yeah. Okay. So you came up with 5 tips to maximize your business. One of the things, you know, and I think this is a culmination, is I'll call it detaching yourself as the CEO from the day-to-day running of your business. And, you know, every single one of those things that you talked about is a reflection of that bigger statement, if you will. And I think as entrepreneurs, you know, are you the CEO of your business? And like you said earlier, sometimes they can't get their head around that title. So are you the leader of your business?
Yeah.
You know, are you the leader of your team? And I know that those words also, you know, who's your second in command?
Yeah, 2IC, baby.
And not everybody likes the term second in command. There's others, you know, is it your COO, your chief operating officer? If you're, you know, familiar with the EOS model, they call it an implementer. And to each business owner, it's going to be something a little different that it has to fit them. So anyway, we could go down many, many rabbit holes. And for listeners, I just want to let you know that this particular episode is the middle part of a series about, you know, your exit plan. So last week, if you haven't listened to it, we talk about the various options that can happen. You don't have to sell your business, but how are you going to exit your business? And next week, I'm going to bring on an entrepreneur who has gone through the sale of a business. And she and I are going to talk about it as I share some of the tips, tricks, and mistakes, if you will, that can happen when you do sell your business. So, Wendy, any last words?
If your audience would love to learn more about how to build the value of their business and even get an example of what their business is like now, I would encourage them to check out my URL, blackstarwealth.com/B as in Bob, V as in Victor, A as in Apple, BVA.
Perfect. Perfect. And that'll be in the show notes for sure.
Oh, perfect. Thank you very much, Diana. It is a job that needs to start now. That's my final word.
Yeah, because it doesn't happen overnight, does it?
No.
So thanks so much, Wendy. You and I always have great conversations. I always look forward to them. And I hope that for my listeners that this has been valuable. If you have questions, please send me an email or, you know, reach out to Wendy at, you know, her website is blackstarwealth.com. Reach out to me. We'll put you in touch with the right kinds of people so that you can start planning that exit strategy now instead of when it is, you know, a dire thing that needs to happen. So thanks again, Wendy. And thanks, listeners, for listening to the Work Less, Profit More Business Podcast. If you have liked this, enjoyed this, found it valuable, I'd love for you to share it. And on your favorite listening platform, give it a review. So until next week, remember, you can do this. Thanks a lot.